Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing investing in a volatile market.
That's right, man. We are talking about investing. And honestly, before we even dive into this, I feel like it's worth mentioning that we understand that not everybody is in a position to where they can invest lots of money right now in a volatile market to take advantage of these downswings that we're seeing. And so, but that being said, there are a lot of hangups that people have when it comes to investing in the market when there are lots of fluctuations. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how to actually go about investing in a volatile market, as well as ways that we can kind of control some of our emotions as well. Because honestly, isn't that the biggest hangup that we have? Like, we know what we should be doing, but there are emotions that keep us from doing the right thing. So I'm excited that we're going to talk about that.
How do you control your emotions, Matt?
I bottle them up. I tamp them down. And then when no one's looking, I just break something. off in the corner.
My wife's like, why is this dish broken? I have no idea.
I don't know what happened.
Things are randomly breaking all around the house. That's one way of handling it. That's for sure.
But, yeah, that's sort of the Hulk method. As Kate and I have been catching up on our Marvel movies, as you know.
Yes, yeah, I know. Yeah, you've been doing that. All right, yeah, well, I'm looking forward to tackling this topic, Matt. And there's so much to say for people in all different areas of their investing lifetime. And I think in particular for our listeners who are younger, the ones who didn't necessarily go through the Great Recession. They were in middle school or high school or something like that 10 years ago, and they didn't have any sort of money on the table. They weren't investing at that point in time. Well, this feels like new territory for people like them. And so, yeah, I think it's important to address this topic for sure. But before we get to that, Matt, you recently got scammed on Facebook Marketplace.
Yep, got scammed.
Uh-oh. How much money did you lose?
No, I did not get scammed. So previously, you know, we've talked about the stimulus money, and you and I, we discussed what we should do with that stimulus money, how some of that money, maybe 10%, it's good and even healthy to spend on yourselves as a sort of splurge. And I mentioned
a little treat yourself.
Exactly. Treat yourself. And I mentioned that I was looking at a bike. Well, I got my bike, by the way. I got my Salsa Journeyman, which is a sweet bike. I'm not being paid to say this. I love it that much. But I did want to be responsible. And so I made sure to sell a bike. You know, we kind of have a little bike shop going on in our basement. So I listed that bike on Facebook via the marketplace, and it went within a day or two. It was gone. And I am on top of that kind of stuff. And so I marked it as sold, right? And so that's how I knew that when I received a text message on my phone that said, hey, is this item still available? And it had a Facebook link to a marketplace. You know, you could see it in the URL. And I almost clicked it. But I thought, wait a minute. That listing shouldn't be live at all because I remembered that I had marked it as sold, right? And so I looked at the URL a little bit closer. And I saw that it was not a legitimate Facebook URL. I thought it had like a subdomain going on because it had like secure, what I thought was a dot, right? I thought it said secure.facebook.com or whatever. But in fact, it had a dash,
ooh,
which means it is not a subdomain. It's a separate URL, actually. Or specifically, it's a subdomain, but not a Facebook of some fraudulent site. So I was that close to actually clicking that link. But I was a little curious to see what they would say. And so I did reply back and I was like, what's the item? Obviously, I did not hear from them after that. But I wanted to mention that because a lot of us have experience with scams via Craigslist. But this is the first time that I had ever received a scammy, right? Or a spammy message from a Facebook listing. So I wanted to mention that just to make our listeners aware that make sure that you're being careful with, you know, with the links that you're clicking, even if it's a message through Facebook. I mean, that link definitely could have been sent, I'm guessing, through Messenger or something like that. But the fact that it was sent to me outside of Facebook via text messages, that definitely raised a red flag. And so a lot of folks might be in a similar situation as me. Just make sure that you're being careful.
Yeah, man. It's like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, I saw Consumer Reports wrote an article on, you know, the expansion of Facebook Messenger scams. They've really, really proliferated. So that's a good warning. And I'm glad you didn't click on the link. Who knows what sort of personal info they're trying to mine or, and I feel like too, right now, the scams are just abounding. With coronavirus, stimulus checks, PPP loans, there are just all sorts of scamsters trying to get in the mix. It's highly unfortunate. It's terrible to watch, but we have to look out for ourselves and be careful not to click on errant links and not to have conversations with people that we don't know at all. And yeah, so that's a good warning to share with people.
But yeah, I didn't get scammed. I wasn't going to give Janice any of my information.
Well, Janice, that's a classic scammer name too. Come on.
Obvious. Yeah, so obvious.
Sorry to any listeners out there named Janice. All right, Matt, let's talk about the beer we're having on the show today. This is Athena Paradiso from Creature Comforts Brewing Company. They're right around the corner from us in Athens, Georgia. This is a fruited Berliner Weiss. It's got cherries, raspberries, and cranberries in it. And I'm looking forward to having this one on the show with you today, my friend.
Yeah, man, this is a seasonal beer. This is something that they release, I guess, pretty much every spring, like early spring. And this is one that you picked up recently to donate to the show. So thank you, Joel.
Yeah, well, dude, every spring I end up buying like 3-6 packs of this one because I love this beer so much.
It's a good one, for sure.
So, all right, we'll talk about that one at the end of the episode, but I think people know. I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, let's get on to the subject at hand. Today, we're talking about investing in a volatile market. And volatile markets in particular bring out the worst in investors, or they can bring out the worst in investors, because we're often guilty of overreacting to the good news and the bad news alike. If the news is good, we get invigorated and we think it's going to continue to be good. And if it's bad, we get pessimistic. And it's hard to look into the future and see when things could turn around, right? So investing while the market is experiencing volatility, like it is right now, takes kind of some amount of nerve on our part, right? People are out there selling off their stake in particular companies right now for a reason. Some sectors are suffering in a big way right now. Like, for instance, who knows how long airlines are going to suffer profit declines because of COVID? Are people going to continue to fly in the same way, even as restrictions continue to get lifted in different cities and parts of the country? Is flying ever going to be the same? That's kind of a question that investors have to tackle right now. And that's why some of the airline stocks have had a massive hit. And it's important to note that the market is more volatile based on a confluence of factors at the moment, too, many of which are based in economic reality, that lots of American businesses are going to have a tougher time moving forward because of the pandemic we've experienced. But as long-term buy and hold investors, Matt, right, buying in a down market is crucial to our wealth building efforts. It's something we have to do. We have to get comfortable with. And that's why we felt like we really had to cover this topic today on the show.
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's sort of not unlike us having to get used to living with COVID-19 as part of our lives now. But I agree, man, continuing to buy and hold, they are both far more difficult to do in a volatile market for most investors. And then on top of that, when we hear terms like bear market and recession being thrown around, it makes it even harder for many of us to continue to invest. But it is crucial that we continue investing when the market is in a state of turmoil, because it can give us a big boost to our overall net worth. You know, it is, as we've said before, buying a stake in a variety of American businesses on sale. And although it always feels good to buy, you know, a consumer good, maybe an item of clothing or a new bike like I just got at a steep discount, we have a much harder time feeling good about buying stocks that are on sale or even buying them at all. Right?
Yeah, it is amazing how the inverse is not true, how that's the one thing in our lives that we have the hardest time buying on sale is the American stock market or the world stock market. But almost anything else, we're like super pumped.
Yeah. So true, man. But still, it's so crucial that we do this, and this has a big benefit to our future self.
Yeah, for sure. It totally does. Matt, I was impressed too. I recently saw a study from Vanguard that showed that a majority of Vanguard investors in particular didn't make any changes to their portfolio in the recent wild downswing, in particular in the 30% decline that mostly happened incredibly quickly in March. And 90% of U.S. Vanguard investors stayed the course. They weren't doing any buying or selling apart from their regular dollar cost averaging that happens out of every paycheck. And so that was pretty cool to see, right? Vanguard investors might not be the norm, though. I haven't seen more studies necessarily showing that customers of other companies are doing something differently. But Vanguard investors are, by nature, because of the founder, Jack Bogle, and his philosophy in buying and holding, they are probably a little different than the average person.
I mean, Vanguard investors in particular subscribe to that Bogle investing philosophy where you buy for the long haul and you buy super diversified funds.
Yep, cheap index funds that are widely diversified. And there's even people, the Bogle investing philosophy, Matt, has taken on such a life of its own. There's a website called Bogleheads, and they're basically these followers that are so in love with Jack Bogle, his philosophy, what he started, that there are forums where people discuss how great it is. But I think we can learn from those investors, right? That resolve to do very little or nothing in a market like this, where they are willing to stay the course, even in the midst of a lot of turbulence.
Yeah, what's important here is that they didn't do the biggest sin, which is actually sell some of their portfolio as the market was going to decline. Because on one hand, this seems like good news, right? If investors stay the course, that means they didn't lock in those losses by selling. But on the other hand, maybe this is bad news, right? Like, there are a lot of missed opportunities if you didn't purchase more funds during that recent plunge in the market. A lot of this depends on your temperament and your ability to withstand losses. And it also depends, too, on the phase of investing that you're in as well, right? If you're in the growth stage of investing, you're going to be able to withstand some of these turbulent times, right? Because the more turbulence you experience, that means you're exposed to risk. And that risk is crucial when it comes to growing your portfolio. But if you happen to be in the preservation stage of investing, it's a lot tougher to weather these ups and downs like that as you're drawing on that money, as you have a need for your portfolio.
Where there's also a big difference in seeing an actual numerical decline. Let's say the same investor at age 25 and age 55 have the same exact allocation in a total stock market fund, but one has been investing for 30 more years. They've got so much more at stake. A 25-year-old has been investing probably for 2 or 3 years in all likelihood, and the 55-year-old has been doing it for close to 30. So there's something psychological about seeing a massive number drop, even if the percentage is the same amount, right?
Sure, yeah. I'm sure seeing a 20% drop on $1 million feels a lot different than a 20% drop on $10,000, even though, like you said, the percentage is the same.
Yeah, well, before we get into the specifics on investing in a volatile market, I want to quickly talk about kind of some investor sentiment right now, in particular, individual investors like our listeners, like you and I. There is kind of this belief to a certain extent that the stock market is ignoring reality. The bear market obviously happened really quickly. Stocks took a pretty sharp rebound. And despite a lot of hard unemployment news, despite a lot of hard medical news coming out, the stock market just kind of continued to rise. And it was freaking people out. Like, why is the stock market not reflecting what's happening right now? So I thought that was kind of important to cover. And I got just a couple of thoughts. I think, you know, one thing that we experienced in this downturn in particular, well, we experienced just a lot of government intervention in the market that's been taken to like an extreme that we've never seen before. So I think that's one reason that the stock market has actually been performing better than it probably otherwise would have. Injecting that kind of money into the system that supports unemployed Americans, direct payments to almost all Americans, and grants to sustain small businesses, as well as the massive actions that the Fed took to shore up the Main Street economy, it's created a lot of solvency. And it's also created a lot more optimism than we would typically see for investors, just to know that the government is there and has the back of the economy. And granted, a lot of those programs haven't gone quite according to plan. Some of them have been really poorly implemented, but I feel like we have seen companies that otherwise might have gone bust, might have had a really, really hard time climbing out of the COVID trough that they've been put in. I think it's no wonder that we're seeing actually a more positive sentiment from investors than would normally be the case in a typical recession of years past.
Yeah. And, you know, to specifically address too, just the difference between what we're seeing in the stock market and what we're seeing in our day-to-day lives, right? The difference between Wall Street and the difference between Main Street is that investors are optimistic because of all this money that has been injected into the economy. And you can see that optimism daily and by the minute based on stock tickers, right? I think investors do have reason to be optimistic. But then the question is, why do we see what feels like our lives trailing that optimism in the stock market? And I think that comes down to the nature of what we've experienced, right? I mean, there's been government mandates that we need to stay home. Businesses have been forced to shut down for, you know, over a month, you know, some close to 2 months. And it takes a long time to start that machine back up, right? It's like this massive freight train that is pretty hard to stop on a dime, but we pretty much did that, which is crazy. But it takes even longer to get that train rolling again. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of time. And so I think that's kind of the difference between what we're seeing on Wall Street and what we're seeing on Main Street. But then overall, you know, I think a lot of folks might be asking the question, should the government have intervened that much? Should the Fed had stepped in like they did? And, you know, I think you and I would say that it was largely necessary in order to prevent our economy and businesses and just the markets from tanking even more. You know, we've yet to see the long-term effects of that involvement. But this is an explanation as to why we are seeing the stock market recover. But at the same time, we're seeing our local businesses and even national companies lag behind when it comes to their ability to conduct business. But then obviously, when it comes to their earnings as well.
Yeah, we don't really get a whole lot into macroeconomics, Matt. This is kind of a big situation where macroeconomics has impacted us in a micro way with stimulus checks, with the need to take on these government loans, if you can get one, through the PPP program, through the SBA. And also, too, we saw some of these big companies, the big airlines, Carnival Cruise Lines, get money from the government. Well, was that the right move? I mean, it's really hard to say. And a lot of smart people come down on different sides of that issue. So it's not something that we're going to cover too much here. But I thought it was an interesting question because I think a lot of people are seeing the stock market doing really well in a time where they're not doing really well. And it's hard to see. But that's also kind of the way it happens sometimes. That's kind of what happened after the Great Recession. The stock market almost led the recovery. There were a lot of people predicting the stock market was going to go lower and lower. It was going to continue to sink in a time when it started to rebound. That was hard for people to fathom in the aftermath of the banking scandals and the foreclosure crisis, but it happened. So yeah, I'm glad we touched on that a little bit. But okay, we're going to get to some personal considerations and how people need to think about investing right now, in particular in a volatile market. And we're going to get to our thoughts on that right after the break.
All right, Joe, we are back from the break. We're talking about investing in a volatile market. And when we say investing in a volatile market, we actually mean putting your money into a volatile market. And we also mean it from the standpoint of how to do it right now, right? And so that's what we're going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about how to actually go about doing that. But first, we want to point out that your own personal finances, that is going to dictate whether or not you should be investing right now. Your personal finances, like that's going to actually take priority over investing right now. Because investing in a bear market is a great thing, right? If you are not trying to time the market and if you're investing for the long haul and if you have steady income. But you don't want to prioritize investing if your paycheck isn't secure and you don't also have a solid savings backup. Also, if you are close or if you are in retirement, you know, there are other impacts you need to consider as well. If this downswing has you freaking out a little bit because of the portfolio erosion that you've suffered, you may not be properly allocated, and that's something that you can change as well. And also, you might need to maybe rethink some certain financial levers that you have, perhaps, you know, paring back some of your spending or even working a little bit longer. There is more to our personal finances and our money than just investing. And so make sure that you have those kind of basics squared away first before you kind of continue with our conversation today.
Yeah. And Matt, everybody right now, I think, has to have a written investing plan. That's such a crucial part of being able to actually continue to invest when the market's down, when it's volatile, when it's up and down, right? And it's, I think, randomly buying and selling can lead to financial loss for people, but it can also lead to higher levels of stress. The results can be catastrophic for people in their retirement accounts, and it can also just raise their blood pressure at the same time. So it's important for people to make decisions before a volatile market occurs to kind of have that written investing plan in place. So start to make some of those decisions now. See how you've reacted to the current market volatility. And I think that can help you write your investing plan based on your own personal tendencies, right? And a couple of questions that you need to ask yourself are, do I ever invest in individual stocks? And if so, how much? And then when? And what are the metrics that you need to see in order to make buying that stock or that ETF a smart move? Do you start to pour extra money into your 401k and Roth IRA when the stock market dips to a certain point? You know, make sure that you have these things in writing so you can know exactly how you're planning to invest when the market does have a dip in particular. And Matt, so much of this comes down to like a rules-based approach to investing, having a checklist or clearly defined process of how and when we buy and sell investments. That can help us to avoid irrational and exuberant decisions and can provide some consistency to our approach that can really be difficult to muster otherwise. It's really hard to stay consistent, especially in the face of uncertainty and difficulty. And so I think those rules that you always follow and then sets of questions that you have to ask yourself before you decide to invest more are super helpful as we seek to become good long-term investors that don't fret too much about the ups and downs of the market. That rules-based approach can provide a good deal of clarity, and it can make it easier to follow through, to continue investing, even in a time where you are feeling uncertain about where the market is and where it's going. And at the same time, those rules can make it a whole lot easier on your brain to prevent you from thinking about all the possible what-if scenarios, because there are so many of those. If you have your rules and your approach and you stick to it, it's just so much easier to continue going at that specific pace.
Yeah, man. Essentially, what we're talking about here is creating some routine in our lives, specifically in our financial lives. In our day-to-day, you know, regular lives, we have routines. A lot of us wake up at the same time every single morning. We don't, you know, the night before, we're not looking at the clock thinking, okay, what time should I wake up in the morning? It's just, it's kind of on autopilot. And so that's what we're talking about doing here with our finances as well. So for instance, like dollar cost averaging, this could be a great approach, a great rule for you. If you can dollar cost average into your 401k every single paycheck and also into your IRA, every month, then you're going to be off to a great start. And then in addition to that, with excess cash that you then want to invest, you can ask yourself maybe a series of questions like, will I need this money in the next few years? Like, do I know what I am investing in? Generally speaking, the simpler your strategy is, that's going to make this process far easier. And so one of the easiest ways to simplify your strategy and your approach is to look at target date retirement funds, or just as easily, you can look at total stock market funds or S&P 500 funds. And we know that this approach is proven and it's effective. And this is a way for you to stick with something versus kind of constantly having to grapple with it mentally, right? And so like on the other end of the spectrum, you might be asking yourself, you know, should I be investing in a sector that I maybe know nothing about? Recently, man, there is a story about a lot of folks deciding to start trading this cheap oil ETF on Robinhood. But the fund actually wasn't what they thought it was. They thought that they were buying actual barrels of oil, essentially. But in fact, in reality, they're actually looking at futures contracts. And it's this much more sophisticated financial product. And it's not going to reflect the cost of oil. You know, like folks thought that, oh, it's cratering right now. Now's the time to buy. I want to buy it low. But unfortunately, they didn't do the due diligence to know that this wasn't actually the cost of oil. It was on the contracts instead.
Yeah. And then the ETF had to make fundamental changes to kind of how it did business, how it structured itself. And some of these individual investors, depending on how much money they put in, that money could be wiped out. And that's something that probably wasn't on a lot of their radar. So yeah, knowing your strategy, keeping it simple, not investing in a certain ETF or sector because you saw one hot tip or a story touting how great it was going to be, that can A, make it so much easier to continue to invest if you're going about it in a way that's just incredibly simple and easy to understand. And at the same time, it prevents you from investing in things that you don't really know anything about. So Matt, one of my favorite financial writers, his name is Ben Carlson. He writes at a site called awealthofcommonsense.com. He wrote about how he's handling additional funds as the market goes through some volatile times. He's got some sage advice, man. It's important to note that not everyone is in his position, right? He saved up enough money to tackle it in this manner, but we'll post a link to his plan in the show notes. It's pretty similar to kind of what I like to use as well. First, he's dollar cost averaging. And that's something that you just talked about, Matt. He's putting money in every single pay period or every single month. Basically, he's taking timing the market off the table and he's just doing it consistently, which is an excellent way to be an investor. And he said that his infrequent income goes directly into investments. So let's say he gets some birthday money or Christmas money or whatever. He is going to put that money in the market, money that he didn't see coming, that infrequent infusion of cash. That's where he's going to put it. That's what he prioritizes. And then he said he's ready to quote unquote back up the truck when the market hits certain benchmarks. And so he's got a certain amount of cash on hand that when the market does go down a certain amount, he's ready to put that cash to use in his portfolio. And so, yeah, his rules-based approach, his clear definition of his rules is so helpful in keeping the course and continuing to invest no matter what the market looks like.
Yeah, man. You know, what's important here, though, is to define what your rules are. And so depending on your income and your savings rate, like backing up the truck, that could mean contributing maybe just a little bit more to your 401k at work. It could mean maybe completely maxing out your Roth IRA, or that might be investing even more in a taxable brokerage account. We still want to make sure that we're keeping enough cash on hand in an emergency fund, but then having rules, you know, in addition to that to guide you during uncertain times is going to be really valuable. We talked about your plan a little bit. We talked about Ben's plan. Let's talk about my plan. How
100% Bitcoin.
Oh, you know me so well. Bitcoin and gold.
Oh, look at you.
All the way.
But only physical gold that goes underneath your mattress.
Yeah, I like the actual bullion that you can hold. Man, for me, I found it was really important to actually write out a plan. So for Kate and I, we have a variable income. So we found that it was important for us to be super nerdy here and lay out some of these rules like we're discussing. And we did this years ago. So what that means for us is that at the beginning of the year, we try to fully fund and max out our Roth IRAs as soon as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean that we purchase funds yet, but we make sure we go ahead and transfer that money from our day-to-day checking and savings account over to our brokerage company, specifically Vanguard. And right now, the Roth IRA contribution limits are $6,000. So it's really easy to chop that up into 12 months. You've got these little bite-sized pieces of $500. I love that, by the way, once they up the maximum to $6,000, made it a whole lot easier for me to wrap my brain around that, right?
Yeah, that $5,500 a year cap was so hard because you couldn't come up with an even amount that you would you'd put in every month.
Yeah, man, I can't do that kind of math in my head.
Right, exactly, me neither.
I like the $500. So basically, we know that every single month we have $500 to purchase some of our favorite retirement funds, specifically VOO, like VOO. That's my favorite. And so like you, like Ben, every single month, we're dollar cost averaging. However, one thing I like to keep an eye out for, though, like Ben mentioned those benchmarks, specifically what I like to keep an eye out for is that if the market ever drops close to 10% within a 30-day period, that means I'm not just going to buy a single month's worth of VOO. I'm buying 3 months' worth. So that means we're going $1,500 in. So that doesn't happen often, but you know, maybe like once or twice a year, something like that. But then beyond that, another benchmark is 20%. If I ever see the market get close to, 20% on sale, that means we're putting a lot more in, like closer to 6 months. And I can only really remember this happening like once or twice in the past 10 years where we were looking at buying 6 months worth of VOO, right? $3,000. However, man, one other benchmark that we had never really set because this had never happened before, but recently back in March, the markets dipped close to 30%. And although we didn't have this written out to where, okay, anytime the market will drop by 30%, we will buy, we will completely buy everything. we saw this as a great opportunity because for us in our adult lifetime, basically, of investing in the market, we've never seen a discount this dramatic. And we completely depleted the rest of the money that we had sitting there waiting to dollar cost average for the rest of the year because it was on sale so drastically. I will say we were a little bit nervous and we still are because we don't know where the bottom is. We, it might continue to drop some more. But given the rules that we had laid out with 10%, 20%, we just saw this as an extension of our rules. So because of that, we went ahead and, man, we went all in. We wanted to make sure that we're taking advantage of the market being on sale, and we made the rest of our purchases for the remainder of the year, for the remainder of 2020. It's good to have these rules set in place, dollar cost averaging, but over the years, man, I've also seen the advantage of there being some flexibility when it does come to making sure that you are able to purchase some of these funds while they're on sale.
Well, it's interesting to hear your plan, Matt. Yeah, it sounds like it's similar to Ben's, but it's got a couple caveats. So,
yeah, again, I like to overcomplicate stuff, overthink stuff as well.
Yeah, well, we've got some other tips we want to share for people that want to take advantage of a volatile market. And in many ways, it's going to involve reining in your emotions. So we'll get to some of those thoughts right after the break. All right, Matt, we're back from the break and we're going to talk about, the emotional aspect of investing in a volatile market. But one of the main things that we need to talk about before that is the idea of rebalancing your portfolio. And that in particular can be a powerful thing to do in a down market. So let's say you don't have all of your long-term investments in a total stock market index fund, like Matt and I tend to do, or a target retirement fund, which we also think is a great option. But you've got a mix of different funds, including stocks, bonds, maybe even REITs, real estate investment trusts, which we've talked about on the show before. Well, based on the movement that we've seen, now is probably a really good time to rebalance your portfolio because your allocation has changed in a big way because of the volatility that the stock market has experienced, right? And so moving money from, for example, bonds to stocks right now, it helps you get back to your former level of portfolio balance, like kind of how you had things, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. While at the same time, it allows you to take more advantage of the recovery that's inevitably going to happen. So yeah, volatile market times are a perfect time to think about rebalancing your portfolio and bringing that portfolio back into kind of that ideal alignment that you have, whether it's 60-40 stocks and bonds, 70-30, like however you think about it, make sure that you are thinking about rebalancing when the market is going through some tough times.
Another perspective for us to keep in mind to help us to keep from freaking out when the market is super volatile is to make sure that we're keeping our retirement account in perspective, right? Like, so right now we're just looking at the trees. Like we are seeing the ups and downs of the market. We're seeing it tank not too long ago. But what we need to do though is to step back and see the entire forest. It is shocking to lose such a large portion of your retirement in such a short period of time. But Joel, it's also important for us to remind ourselves, though, that the greater the risk, the greater the reward. And that is really important for us to keep in mind when we are in the growth phase of investing, right? Like we don't need to be looking at our balances right now. Like I literally don't even know what my balances are right now because it's not important. All I know is that I'm going to invest every single month.
So Emily just got her 401k balance from a previous employer in the mail. And I opened it for her and kind of told her what had happened. And I told her that her balance had dropped $3,000 because it's a pretty small 401k. There's not a whole lot in there. And she was like, what? Oh my gosh, it's terrible. And I was like, no, that's not bad at all. And I told her how much I assumed mine had dropped because I haven't logged in lately. And she was like, oh, that's a lot too. And so she just starts freaking out. But really, when it comes down to it, I'm not freaking out in the slightest because I have a perspective of kind of the overall forest of what the stock market does throughout the years, throughout its lifetime, what the American economy tends to do. And so, yeah, 30% drop in 1 month just doesn't really freak me out, honestly. But yeah, it was interesting to kind of get her take and hear what she thought about that $3,000 drop. That can be disheartening to see, I think, when you open a statement. And for her, it was. But that's the kind of thing, having that sort of other perspective can make opening that statement a whole lot less dramatic and hard.
Yeah, it's so important for us to zoom out and to pull back a little bit, right? So for example, a 100% stock portfolio was down roughly 30% from the peak, like we're talking about earlier, not that long ago. But then stocks shot back up, right? But over the past 10 years, still taking into account the most recent crash, a 100% equity portfolio, so all stocks, still outperforms any other diversification strategy, and you're going to be up 142% over that same time period.
Yeah, Matt, like you said, the greater the risk, the greater reward, but it does come with volatility, even more volatility if you're less balanced and more heavily invested in stocks. Matt, I think one of the reasons that people are so hesitant, though, to continue to invest in times of volatility is because of loss aversion. And that can be a really powerful behavioral mechanism that prevents us from becoming good investors, right? None of us want to lose money. And the surest way to not lose money is to not put any at risk. But that's not a great solution either, right? We've talked about this on the show before. But because taking calculated risks is the only way to ensure that we reap inevitable future rewards, well, when we let our aversion to loss cause us to sit on the investing sidelines, we're actually locking in the greatest risk to our money, which is inflation. So yeah, people freak out about the potential for loss in the stock market, but you don't actually lose anything unless you sell your shares, unless you sell positions. And so if you're able to stay invested and you look at that forest of what the stock market does over the years, well, you're not going to actually incur any sort of losses. You're going to incur great gains, but it's that loss aversion, that mental loss aversion that prevents us from actually staying the course usually.
Yeah, avoiding this perceived risk altogether, like that is the riskiest move that we can make, right? We talked about this back in episode 69. Investing in the stock market does have an element of risk involved, but it's just completely different than the kind of risk that you would incur gambling in Vegas.
Like our friend 5 a.m. Joel likes to do.
Once a year, wants to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
That's just what he does.
I understand that.
But keeping your money under your mattress, like that is a surefire way to make sure that you don't lose any of it. But inflation is going to steadily march on, ensuring that the money you've stowed away will lose purchasing power with each growing year. That's why investing, whether in a volatile market or not, is so important. Joe, this kind of makes me think of Seth Godin as well. He talks about the lizard brain and how like we kind of have this prehistoric, you know, lobe in our brain that all it wants us to do is to be safe, to not take risks, and just survive, essentially. So like in prehistoric times, that meant like making sure that we get enough food to eat and to make sure that we're not eaten by something else. But what that means for us today is that we just sit on our money, right? And we don't put it at risk, which is the exact opposite of what we need to do. So like he talks about that in the context of like launching businesses and delivering products, taking risks, things like that. But it completely applies to investing as well. Like it essentially takes this sort of act of defiance to, you know, actually invest, right? We have to quiet that lizard brain. And it takes action, actually investing your money.
Yeah. And these are risks, I would say, that we're taking with our money that are based on a factual reality and a historical reality of what the free market does, of what innovative businesses tend to do. And so, yeah, this is not just aimless risk, right? These are calculated risks. And so that's, I think, an important distinction, too. This doesn't have, like you said, any correlation to putting your money on the craps table or at the roulette wheel. It's altogether different from that. And Matt, I think ultimately market volatility is the source of enhanced future returns for us. The overall American stock market has returned roughly 9% over the past 90 years. And those 90 years have had their share of difficult events, Matt. If you go back and look at American history, there's a lot of tough stuff that happened over those years, right? Wars, depressions, inflation, deflation, politicians of all sorts of different stripes. And so while it feels a lot better to be buying as the market is rising, at least on our insides, right? It's like, oh, cool. I keep seeing it go up. Well, know that American capitalism has continued to produce results for decades on end, despite real challenges in our face. Foreign enemies, wars on foreign soil. I mean, these sorts of things have affected returns. They've affected the stock market, but they've also created opportunities for people at the same time. So investing in an economic tailspin, although it feels a bit counterintuitive,
I think
it's the best thing that people could be doing over the long term. So at a minimum, dollar cost averaging, right? That's the first rule I think that most of our listeners should be implementing if they want to be good investors through thick and through thin. And then, you know, they can add rules onto their investing plan that go on top of that, that help create an even more efficient system for them to become an investor that invests in a volatile market and that is building wealth through thick, through thin for the long term.
And Joel, I don't want to like discount all that we just said, but maybe the too long didn't read it is just keep investing, right? Like that's all you really need to do. Just make sure that you continue to put money into the market.
Yeah. Boil a 35-minute podcast episode down into like, you know, one sentence. I like it. That's probably what we should have done. Well, keep investing. Yeah. No matter what, whether things are volatile, things are down, it shouldn't be a warning flag to not invest. It should actually make you more excited to continue to do so. I agree.
All right, man, let's go ahead and quickly take it back to the beer. This episode, we enjoyed a beer from Creature Comforts out of Athens, Georgia, and it's called Athena Paradiso. What were your thoughts on this one, buddy?
As I said at the beginning of the episode, I love this beer. Lots of fruit, super fruit heavy, a lot of those red tart fruits going on. And so, yeah, I love kind of the way those fruits play together and kind of create a nice little medley, I'm going to say. Pours a nice pinkish red color. It's tart, it's fruity, it's just thirst quenching. It's a perfect beer, especially for summer as we get closer and closer to the really warm months. I love a beer like this.
Man, I wonder if they choose the color on the can, if they sample it from the actual beer color, because it is so spot on. And like the colors of beer, it varies from year to year, but I feel like it's the exact same color this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is a German-style wheat. And so it's a wheat beer, but it's a super sour tart wheat ale. But then on top of that, you add the tart cherry, raspberry, and cranberry to it. Makes it a lot more interesting. In particular, I feel like this year it had a lot more of that cherry going on, which was really delicious.
And yeah, so we're finishing up my stock for this year, but it's really good.
Glad, oh, is this it?
Yeah. Well, glad we get to share it on the show today.
These are the last two until next year.
Exactly. All right, Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks that want show notes, well, they can go to our website, howtomoney.com, get more info there.
And if you're listening to this episode and you have not yet subscribed to our show, we would ask you to go ahead and mash that subscribe button wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts. And then also, if you've been a longtime listener but haven't yet left us a review, we would love for you to head over to Apple Podcasts. Leave us a solid 5-star review over there, as that helps us to get the word out, help others to find our show who need to be doing smarter things with their money as well.
Yeah, some people need some more encouragement, need some more help. And that's what we're here for.
Yeah, buddy. All right. Well, that's going to be it, dude. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.